A warning, this episode contains discussion of suicide and sexual assault. In the Netflix movie Blonde, Ana de Armas steps into the billowing white dress of one of the most iconic figures of the 21st century, Marilyn Monroe. It's a striking performance in a nearly three-hour feature, but the film finds no shortage of ways to paint its subject as a tragic figure with daddy issues. The movie also stars Bobby Cannavale and Adrian Brody as just two of the men in Marilyn's life. I'm Ayesha Harris, and today we're talking about Blonde on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Talkspace, an online therapy platform. Talkspace's virtual appointments eliminate the need to commute to an in-person session. You can send text, video, or voice messages to update your therapist from your device. Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end bank-grade encryption technology to store client information. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and use code HAPPYHOUR to get $100 off your first month.
Joining me today is NPR senior editor Barry Hardiman. Welcome, Barry.
Hi.
So the first act of Blonde depicts the unstable childhood of Norma Jean Mortensen, who would eventually become movie star Marilyn Monroe. Her mother struggles with mental illness and is eventually committed to a psychiatric ward, and then Norma Jean is sent to live in an orphanage. But the bulk of the movie focuses on Ana de Armas as Norma Jean slash Marilyn, her ascendance in Hollywood, and her romantic relationships with abusive and uncaring men. She dabbles in a triad with the sons of actress Charlie Chaplin and Edward G. Robinson, who are played by Xavier Samuel and Evan Williams. There are unhappy marriages to a thinly veiled version of baseball player Joe DiMaggio, played by Bobby Cannavale, and an obvious stand-in for playwright Arthur Miller, who's played by Adrian Brody. And, of course, there's her infamous affair with President John F. Kennedy, played by Casper Philipson. All the while, the movie makes sure we all know Marilyn's got serious daddy issues, which graft onto her relationships and serve as her downfall. Blonde is written and directed by Andrew Dominik, who's probably best known for the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And this is an adaptation of Joyce Carol Oates' novel of the same name, which took extensive creative liberties with Monroe's life. And it should be noted that the movie also plays fast and loose with the facts.
Yes.
Very fast. Very, very loose. So much. In aesthetics and tone, this is more like a dark, twisted fantasy than a straightforward biopic. Blonde is streaming on Netflix now, and that means we're also going to be talking about some spoilers because it's kind of impossible to talk about this movie without talking about spoilers. Yeah. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty with all of that. Now, Barry, I understand that you, like myself, are a Marilyn Monroe fan, obsessive, maybe?
Absolutely. Since my childhood.
Yes. So neither of us are coming into this unbiased. We had our thoughts beforehand. But what was your initial take on this movie?
I have a lot of thoughts on what this movie is doing and what it's doing well and not well. And, you know, the problem with it probably is that it's presented as a fantasy, but it's awfully sadistic. And I think that what it falls prey to, which I think happens a lot with pieces of art about American icons, right, is that you say, OK, I'm here to find the real Marilyn Monroe. I'm here to find the real Johnny Cash, you know. But what happens is that by finding the thing you think is new, you've boiled the icon down to that newness. And I think what Dominik has really boiled her down to is her trauma. He's made her essentially a trauma victim from beginning to end. And in order to see Marilyn in the fullness that she is, certainly she was abused and traumatized and, you know, the terrible things happened to her. But she was also a woman with a real intellect. She was a woman with friends, which we do not see in this movie. She was a woman with loves and interests, and she was a great actress. And so it's sort of unfortunate to me that at this point, you know, in 2022, that we have boiled her down to her being sort of, you know, eaten up and subsumed into the sort of maw of Hollywood and American iconry instead of to see her through a wider lens as time has gone by. So whatever I disliked about this movie or felt uncomfortable with, it is anchored by what I felt was an extraordinary performance.
Yeah.
Ana de Armas did something really fascinating, and I don't know that anyone else could have done it. I mean, I could almost not tell her from Marilyn in some places.
Yeah.
And yet I never forgot that she was also Ana de Armas, and that was important too.
I absolutely had that same reaction where, and part of that I think is also another issue with the film, is that so much time has been spent on making Ana de Armas look like Marilyn, like to the point where it's just like kind of freakish sometimes, yes, how much she looks like her.
Yeah.
Like everything else kind of fell to the wayside for at least to me when it came to all the other elements of what like Dominic was trying to do.
Uh-huh.
But what Ana's doing as a performer outside of just looking like her, I think is also really extraordinary. There's one scene, it's the first scene she has where she's like first meeting the ex-athlete played by Bobby Cannavale, and they're having like dinner at a restaurant. And to me, this is like the clincher of the film and kind of what I would have liked to see more of.
I want to move to New York and study acting. In the movies, they chop you all to bits. Cut, cut, cut. It's a jigsaw puzzle, but you're not the one to put the pieces together. Oh, but to live in a part.
He doesn't really seem just all that interested. And then, like, you can see in Ana de Armas' face, like, she kind of shifts all of a sudden. Like, and it's just a moment that passes. And then she's like, but I'm also interested in settling down. And I'm like, that moment to me was like, oh, this is really interesting. I see what she's doing here. And while, like, the real Marilyn Monroe wasn't exactly quite, like, based off of her sort of autobiography, My Story, which was never completed during her lifetime, but was sort of dictated through conversations with Ben Heck, the screenwriter, and was later released after she died. Like, she talked more about wanting to be an actress than actually wanting to, like, or, like, believing that she would ever settle down and find love.
Yeah.
And even though that doesn't feel true, that scene felt true in the movie.
Right.
Of course, we're not going to get total verisimilitude, and I expect creators to take the creative license with this. But for me, experiencing the rest of the film was akin to my experience of what I remember of watching the movie Precious. That was one of my, like, one-and-done kind of movies where, like, I saw it once. Yeah. I was like,
Boys Don't Cry for me.
Yeah, yeah, same. Also, Boys Don't Cry. Like, it's one of those movies where it's just torture. Over and over.
An incredible performance.
Yes.
You're like, I am watching cinema. I am watching acting. I'm watching art. I never want to do it again.
Exactly. And I was just like, why are we seeing this, especially towards a woman? And it's just like, she was so much more than just her trauma. And this is what the film is like reduced to. Now, I don't know if you read the interview that Andrew Dominik gave.
Oh, I don't know if I did either.
Okay.
Hit me.
So Andrew Dominik gave an interview to the BFI, and Dominik really, he basically explains every inch of that film for me and my reaction to it.
Uh-huh.
Here's one sample quote. It's about a person who's going to be killing themselves. And I'm going to skip ahead, but he goes, she's famous, she's beautiful, she's rich. If you look at the Instagram version of her life, she's got it all. And she killed herself. Now, to me, that's the most important thing. It's not the rest. It's not the moments of strength. End quote.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
I mean, I'm so glad I didn't read that before I saw the movie. If you document only the pieces of a person's life that make up that a slow slide, then yeah, that's what this movie is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's funny. It makes me so sad because it does seem like Hollywood has decided to say, okay, I'm gonna look at this with 2022 eyes. And the thing is like, it turns out that the eyes, the 2022 eyes aren't that much different than the ones that were watching her dress billow up for the 7-year itch shoot.
Right.
And also, by the way, what an old-fashioned way to think about Marilyn. Oh, look at her. She had it all. Literally, like, even as a child, I think I was like, I can remember my mother saying, oh, poor Marilyn. You know what I mean? Like, no one looked at this woman and said, it looks like you have it all at that point. You know what I mean?
Right. It also just fundamentally misunderstands mental illness or even just like what it means to be or feel suicidal. Like Marilyn herself said in My Story that like she envisioned herself winding up kind of exactly like she was found in real life. But then she follows that up saying, but like, this is the type of thing where on Monday you might feel like this, but then by Wednesday you could be laughing again. So like we can't, there's so much speculation there that seems unnecessary and unwarranted, but that's what this movie wants to explore.
And that's the thing that's sort of interesting is that like I didn't love Joyce Carol Oates' book, but I liked the project because certainly she took more than artistic license. You know, there are real things that she said, you know, that are truly fabricated in the book. But if the idea of the fabrications is to make a greater truth, to sort of say something that is more true than a faithful adaptation, there are ways in which she achieved it. And I think it's because what she had in mind was a conversation between not just Marilyn and her abusers or Marilyn and the people she encountered in Hollywood, but a conversation between Marilyn and America and Marilyn and American eyes and Marilyn and the way we consume the sort of the iconography of America. So she had in mind a project that was more interesting. And he, unfortunately, took that project and shaved off the edges. I think it's very telling, by the way, that he doesn't actually delve into her teenage years. We go from her being a child to immediately, frankly, like being sexually assaulted by someone who I think is meant to be Daryl Zanuck.
The studio head of 20th Century.
Exact. So again, he's boiled down her childhood down to the trauma of her mother, who was paranoid schizophrenic. You know,
right.
But that is not the fullness of the human experience. And if anyone knew that, it was Marilyn.
Right. You mentioned that. And I also just want to kind of talk about the other ways this film really sort of just duplicates all the other ways we've seen Marilyn. Like, there are multiple scenes where we see her out, like, at a premiere or whatever, and it's just slow motion men yelling and, like, leering at her in slow motion. We actually see a few recreations of her, like, famous moments in movies, which I found kind of jarring to see Ana de Armas standing next to the actual George Sanders in All About Eve.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Yeah, but, like, in one scene when she's doing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, it, like, zooms out to look at the audience, and then the audience is, like, this perfect, like, square, and you can see the red of the light, like, shining back on their faces. And it was giving me, like, Leni Riefenstahl, like, vibes, like, Triumph of the Will.
That's a really good point, yeah.
Because it was, like, so symmetrical and perfect, and it was also supposed to, I guess, indicate, like, look at this woman who's just here to be looked at while I'm also going to just look at her.
Yes. And I think you're meant to feel that you are looking at them, look at her.
Right.
There's a lot of fourth wall, you know, monkey business where, you know, you are supposed to be thinking about the act of watching it. And believe me, Mr. Dominic, I was thinking about what I was watching.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's definitely sort of playing with that. But I'm not sure that the effect is, as you say, what he intended it to be.
Right. Like, how did it feel for you? Like, whether it was that or seeing what felt like maybe 5 minutes was probably only maybe a minute or so of her going down on JFK and just
that scene, the JFK assault, which it really is like just an awful scene and almost unbearable, however you look at it. Like, it's unbearable in the violence of the camera because we're looking at her
like in extreme close-up.
Extreme close-up. There were a couple times looking at her in extreme close-up that I wasn't sure what I was looking at, and I was very, very worried. But it also, you know, the idea of seeing Marilyn be essentially raped, right, on camera in many different ways, by the way. There were so many ways that he accomplishes that in different ways that are maybe more thoughtful or more interesting. But this, which is ahistorical, I believe. How far she was mixed up with the Kennedys is probably not nearly as much as popular culture has gone on to claim she was. But to do it in that way, in that sort of stomach-turning way, in which she even then, when she's being sort of brought to his hotel room, she even says, oh, I'm like a piece of meat. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so overdone. It's so heavy-handed. And it's, again, I think, an icky tribute to Ana de Armas that she still manages to act through that scene.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's still acting with her eyes. She's still doing all this stuff, because otherwise it is just so overwrought and so, I got it.
Yeah.
You know? It was such a confusing way to make this particular point about the kinds of trauma and abuse that she suffered. It's much like the abortions, you know?
Yeah.
Which, to literally go in via speculum to talk to this fetus, it adds a layer of absurd, which makes it even almost a humiliation.
Yes. We should know that there is a talking fetus at one point of a baby that she aborted. As it's depicted in the film, the studio demands that she do so. And the fetus talks to her. And yeah, it's there's a lot going on. So, Barry, I want to ask you, if a good dramatization of Marilyn Monroe's life exists or could exist, like, what would it look like?
I think there is more to be said. I think it requires a kind of expansive thinking. And I think that, you know, partly, like, sure, it's 2022, everything sucks, like, things feel dark. I think that there's a, like, we need to be in a less dark timeline for something new to be said about Marilyn.
Yeah.
Like, personally, I would be interested in a portrayal of Marilyn that talks more about her acting, and especially when she was acting through the, like, layers of pills and, you know, and mental illness and still managing in the ways that she did. I would be sort of interested in how, like, that, I think, is something to be explored and lauded. And I think I would be interested to see women reacting to Marilyn, as I know they did because I've read biographies of her. I would be interested to explore what it was like to be a female friend of Marilyn's. I think there is more to say. I think it's a shame that this budget and, God bless this actress, were squandered. Yeah. And it's sad, too, also because he's clearly talented. Like, he's clearly capable of making an interesting movie.
Well, Assassination of Jesse James is, I think, a great movie.
Oh, God. Yeah. This is like his assassination of Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. Like, well, that's, yeah. I guess that's my concern, is that, like, this will kind of become the definitive dramatic version of her, because, you know, there's been many TV movies and smaller movies. And there was, of course, My Week with Marilyn from like a decade or so ago, where Michelle Williams played her. But she, that was, again, another movie where it was like her through the eyes of a man and a man who knew her for like a week. And it's just, I don't know. I do. The only good thing I can see coming out of this is, like, hopefully Ana de Armas gets even better roles. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, that people go and watch actual Marilyn Monroe movies, because like, at the end of the day, that's really all we have of her. Like, that's
and
the
they
purest,
are extraordinary.
Yeah. Like, I was rewatching Bus Stop recently in preparation for this. And that's a movie that actually, like, in so many ways kind of mirrors this and mirrors the entire reaction to her. Yes. So she plays this woman, this like saloon performer who like meets this random 21-year-old kid from a ranch who's like come in town for a rodeo, and he's like, I'm gonna find myself a woman. And he decides he's gonna take her home and marry her. Like, basically her being forced to marry him.
Kidnapping. And worse.
Yeah.
If we really start to think about it.
Yeah, but there's an amazing scene where she talks about like what she wants and like how she wants to be loved and how she wants to be loved for being more than just what she looks like. And it's like, it's great.
Yes. But I'll tell you a thing that really holds up, and by the way, continues to have some really interesting things to say about gender and whatever, is Some Like It Hot.
Yes.
And a friend of mine, her 13-year-old, this was the best pandemic bat mitzvah I ever heard of, where they rented out a theater and watched Some Like It Hot. Oh, I don't even think it was a bat mitzvah. I think it was a b'nai mitzvah. It was a, you know, a non-binary mitzvah. And so the kids loved it. The kids were like, this is fascinating. Like, that movie is a piece of art that is going to stand the test of time. And I think many of her movies do, I still love Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And it's a great way to sort of think more about, like, Anita Loose and those screenwriters of old Hollywood, those women who were in there really thinking about what it was like to be a woman on screen, off screen, anywhere. I think The Misfits is gorgeous.
Yes.
So a much better use of your time, I think, is what Aisha and I are saying, would be to just work through those. And you can go real fun and funny.
Yeah.
Here's a really great use of your rainy weekend, which I know I am approaching, is go watch All About Even. Watch I don't know. How long is she on the screen?
Like, maybe 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Watch her just walk away with it.
Yeah.
Walk away with it. What she left stands the test of time far more than her trauma does, and far more, I think, than this film will. I hope.
Yeah, that is such a perfect way to say it. I have to say that Some Like It Hot, I saw for the first time when I was 12, and it was my gateway to classic films and my first Marilyn Monroe movie, and it remains one of my favorite movies of all time. I love it.
Go watch it, you guys. You can watch it with your little kids, too. There's really nothing better than watching her in that train.
Well, obviously, Barry and I had a lot of thoughts, and we just encourage you to go watch some Marilyn Monroe movies. Just do it.
Let's have a pop culture happy hour Marilyn sleepover.
Oh, I'm so down for it.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what we should do. Anyway, silk jammies.
Yes. Well, we want to know what you think about Blonde and any other Marilyn Monroe movies as well, if you care to share. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Barry Hardiman, thanks so much for being here and for helping me parse through that movie.
Thanks for having me. That was fun.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please sign up for our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. This episode was produced by Romel Wood and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow.